ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? I'm Blank. He's not Branham. He's out, which means BMAC is in. And we're going to be taking you for the next 3 hours on a ride where we are going to be talking and covering everything that you want to talk about and we want to talk about in Houston sports. BMAC is here with me behind the glass, but also here for rebuttal and conversation. And we will have a couple of guests along the way. Kelly Eco will join us, as I once mentored him as an intern. And now he is the beat writer for the Houston Rockets for The Athletic. And we will kick it around about the big win last night and some of the future things that might be going on with the Rockets. Of course, we will be doing mock draft season, BMAC, and you have scheduled Mark Ross of the NFL Network as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Mark Ross was has been a long time director of player development and a scout in the NFL, something like 17, 18 years, has a couple rings with the Giants for some of those efforts, and so he's got a lot of insight. He's on the NFL Network, and he'll join us at 4 o'clock. Maybe we can bounce some Texans free agency ideas off of him.
I would think so. So if you guys have any suggestions or things that you might want to ask either Kelly or Mark, hit us up, 713-780-3776. Text us, call us, or, of course, as you can reach us, at Sacked by BMAC and at Pac-Man Joel with a K, as we are always available. Jeremy is off sauntering through U of H duties. He will be back with us tomorrow. But in the meantime, plenty of room for you guys as we get going. And BMAC, obviously, right off the top, since we mentioned Kelly's going to join us as well. Rockets with a big win last night. I don't know that we've said that. Yes, the Phoenix series, that was nice. I say a series, three games, one home, two away. You win two out of three. A nice little feather in your cap to say progress is being made. But I knew people that were specifically fired up about going to see Wemby last night. And the fact that, one, he disrespected the Rockets when he basically cheered when he knew he wasn't going
right
here.
Yeah, very disrespectful.
Then comes into the building and gets his ass handed to him and gets completely outplayed by the Rockets big, and it made everybody very, very happy going home.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we had this conversation, I guess it was earlier in the week, or maybe it was Friday. I don't, the timing is escaping me at the moment. But we had the conversation about that win in Phoenix. You know, was it the best Rockets win of the season? Certainly it was Jalen Green's best game of the season. And, like, trying to turn that into the conversation of, like, could this be the turning point? Obviously, probably not for the playing game. They're too far back, I would say, to catch the Lakers or anybody else and make it into the playing game. But could this be what gets the ball rolling for these young guys who've been really up and down, this young core? And we saw Jalen Green that Suns game. Now we saw Alpi have best game of his career. And there was a stat that I saw on Twitter that's absolutely amazing. So Şengün is only the sixth player in the last 40 years with at least 45 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 steals in a single game. And he's only the second Rocket during those 40 years, the other one being James Harden.
Yeah, nice stat line. Really nice stat line from a guy that you talk about how we wanted to see since Udoka took over and some of the coaching moves that he made along with his hire that were supposed to develop these younger players. You're talking about a breakout season for Alpi, no matter what we have or have not seen from anybody else. If there's one guy that has benefited the most from a new coaching staff and a new focus on developing these players, it's Alpi, because he continues to get better. There was a push for him that was legit for much of the first half to make the All-Star team, but he's a constant double-double, and he's a guy that just keeps getting buckets. What I really liked last night was, here's a guy that really kind of focused and realized, and I think watched some tape to realize, yeah, Wemby's got a long wingspan, but he's very slight of build. And I don't want to say he's soft yet, but he's obviously underdeveloped. And he just basically said, I'm taking it right to the middle of you, and I'm daring you to stop me. And that allowed him to create space, get the jump hook off, used his butt a couple of times, and then punched one in his face. And you're like, okay, this is the kind of thing that you want to see, because this is what veteran players do. And yet we saw Alpi do it, and you're like, those are the kind of things that you remember going, he's getting it.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's actually, we have a clip right now from Şengün after the game talking about exactly what you just said about the idea of going right at Victor Wembanyama.
He's so tall, really. He's really tall, but he's not that strong yet, you know. So I was going his chest and put him under the rim. So, like I said, they didn't double me tonight that much. So I work in under the rim.
Yeah, when you hear, I mean, obviously the thing that stands out most right away is basically Şengün taking a shot at Wim. He's like, yeah, he doesn't weigh that much. I could push him around. But I love that he threw in right after, and it might get lost because everyone's thinking about, you know, his shot that he took at Wimby. But he mentions the fact, yeah, they didn't double me. Like, he took that as a slight. And I mean, that's what I hear when I hear that soundbite, that Şengün saw, they're singling me up with Wimby. I know I can bully this guy in the post. He did it, obviously, in the game and proved it. And I think he took that as an insult that, look, I'm better than you guys, than the respect you guys are giving me with your defensive coverage, for lack of a better term. So I like that he took that personally and seemed to let it motivate him.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It's interesting to me that a guy that's kind of finding his way in the league has gotten to a point where he thinks he's good enough to get double teamed. Just that alone tells you that he's got confidence, that he now knows that he can get his in this league. And I think a year ago you would have seen a different Alpe, and I think he would have been looking over his shoulder. He would have been afraid, because the one guy Silas would come down on, if nobody else, was Alpe. And now he realizes, hey, I've done this for the majority of this season to let everybody know I should be commanding different defenses than I've ever seen in this league. And good for him, because honestly, when you look at it, these two teams are going to meet up in San Antonio in the next week or so. Greg Popovich is probably going to double team him more the second time around, because everything seemed to be facilitated and get done through Alpe, which we've said for a majority of the year, he's capable of running your offense through the elbow or through the post because he's such a great passer.
Yeah, absolutely. And that'll be something interesting to watch going forward as it relates to the construction of this Rockets team and them trying to build a playoff team. If Şengün can truly kind of be what the offense runs through. Like, I mean, obviously he's not a point guard. He's not going to be bringing up the ball a ton. But if the offense is running through him, much like we saw, and this is going way back to the only time the Rockets won a championship, but the same way the offense, especially before Clyde got there, that the Rockets offense ran through Akeem. It dumped down to the post. He found the guy after that, and the ball moved from there to find the right player and score points. And you're seeing the Rockets do that some with Şengün. And I think it's telling. I mean, the differences that you see between Steven Silas and Ime Udoka, I mean, I think the headlines as far as Steven Silas's poor coaching were obviously some of the players that got in trouble, the idea that they weren't running plays for Jabari Smith, but we might be overlooking that, well, he also might not have been coaching Şengün up to his maximum capability. So now Şengün in, what, year three, getting the best coaching he's ever gotten, it's unlocked a new level for him.
Yeah, see, that's the thing too, B-Mac. It wasn't just Alpe. I mean, there was no development of any of these young players. I mean, Jalen Green should be so far progressed from where he is in terms of how long it's taken this year for him to kind of buy in that if I run a system and I pass the ball away, if I'm open, I'll get it back. If I'm in a spot to shoot the ball, I'll get it back. And defensively, no matter what, I have to put my best foot forward and effort, regardless if I'm making my shots or not, and I've got to do things for the betterment of the team. He's starting to get that. We're seeing that development as well. But when you look at it and just go up and down the line of the younger players and the other players that are on this roster, and you hear some of the things that even from a Rafael Stone standpoint, we can get into some of this with Kelly Eco. Like, there was, I have verified from multiple sources that Rafael Stone would come down on the coaching staff in film sessions and otherwise and say, hey, you can't be critical of the players. These young guys, they're too fragile. They don't like that. They've come and told me, so you can't do that. Well, how do you get better if you can't get coached? Because part of coaching is pointing out where you made mistakes, the negatives, so that you can turn them into positives. If you're not allowed to do that and you're only allowed to be positive and fluff them up, how are they getting any better?
Yeah, there's a couple different directions to go from that. I mean, one is kind of the old man take about Gen Z and not being able to coach them as hard as you used to. I'll try to avoid that take, but it certainly gives off those sort of vibes. The first thing that popped in my head when you're talking about not being able to criticize the players, and obviously you were there firsthand with these two guys, but there seemed to be a culture – amongst people in the Rockets, you know, front office between Tad Brown and Daryl Morey about really not all players. Certainly they had their favorites, but they definitely seemed to coddle some players, like protect them or more than they should have to, you know, a grown man, protect them more than they should have to from criticism and kind of be like their shield or their bubble. And maybe, you know, Rafael Stone, you know, learning under those guys, maybe that's something he took from those guys and is carrying it forward after those guys have left town.
I'm going to tell you what happened. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened, because the shift of power happened when they hired Udoka. And when Udoka came in, he's a Popovich guy. He's a no-nonsense guy. And he's been a disciple under several, Brent Brown, other guys. But he cut his teeth with Pop. So he came into this entire situation and basically said, I'm going to coach the way I coach.
Right.
I'm going to handle these players my way, or don't hire me and I'll go hit the highway and find another job, because that's not what I came here for. And that's when everything changed. That's why I said it's Udoka, it's his coaching staff, because he brought in guys with him that also cut their teeth under Popovich and the Spurs way. And that Spurs way was very successful. And you're seeing and reaping the benefits of it with Alpi, but I think with Jalen Green. I think to some extent with Jabari, because Jabari's taking the criticism or being sat down.
So you think Jalen's getting what you would hope he would get out of that tough style of coaching? Because obviously that seems to have been a rocky road this season.
So it has been. And I would say that early on, if you asked me that question a month ago, I'd probably say no. But like last night is the perfect example. He was, 0 of 10 from three-point range? Oh, he was 1 of 10 from three-point range. He missed 9 threes. And still shot a really good percentage because he made twos, because he played defense, because he didn't turn the ball over. He didn't force himself on his team and therefore gave his team a chance to win.
That's interesting. So it sounds like you're saying, I think the biggest red flag on Jalen Green, or at least one of them, and they're kind of all tied together to this main central thing, what was maturity. But it sounds like what you're saying is that Udoka maybe finally has been able to turn a corner with him and kind of get him to buy into what he wants to do, and that maturity is starting to actually develop.
Yeah, I would say more than Udoka turned a corner, I would say Jalen turned a corner.
Okay.
The biggest problem with Jalen Green was Jalen Green, because Jalen Green didn't want to buy into the system. He was the last guy, when you watched the way they ran their offense, he was the last guy body language and participation-wise to buy in. He wasn't in for giving the ball up once he got it. He wanted to go back to the system Silas ran, where it just run an ISO for me on the wing and let me do my thing. He didn't like it when he got sat down. He told people in the locker room, I don't want to be a sixth man. I don't want to come off the bench. When Udoka talked about changing his starting lineup, when everybody knew the finger was really being pointed at him. And now suddenly you're seeing a guy that's starting to understand, I don't have to make threes. I don't have to, you know, be a gunner. In order to be successful for this team, there's a million different ways I can help them win. Last night was the best example. He shot the ball horribly from three, but shot a good percentage, didn't turn it over, got his teammates involved, still got his numbers, but they got a win.
Yeah, and that's look, I think you could apply this to most of the Rockets' young core. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't say this about Dylan Brooks or Fred VanVleet or any of the veterans who have come from other places, but specifically this young core that was here, you know, for the couple of years under Steven Silas. They're going to have to unlearn some bad habits, especially the guys that came straight in from, the G League or wherever, maybe didn't play under a strong college coach that would have instilled discipline and maturity in them. Maybe Jabari Smith had that playing under Bruce Pearl, but, you know, we could argue that either way. But I think you're seeing a lot of these young guys having gone through 2 years of Steven Silas, no organization, letting basically guys get away with everything, being coddled by the front office, and now they're having to slowly undo those bad habits. And it sounds like, and it seems like, Udoka is maybe starting to turn the corner with some of that.
Yeah, I think he's getting, and I think it was going to be a work in progress, right? I think that you were going to reach certain guys quicker than others. Alpi was one of the guys having the success he's been having simply because he bought in from day one, because he said he wanted to be coached. And so you're seeing a guy that's
He was on J.J. Redick's podcast. He talks like, man, I dealt with way worse coaching in Turkey. Those guys would scream and curse at me, you know, nonstop every day from the time I was 16. Like he was hardened by the time Udoka ever walked through the doors.
Yeah, no. And I think that we saw Jabari. He handled it fairly well, but he had his moments, right?
Yeah.
This entire team, and I've said this over and over with Jeremy, this entire team had to go through a maturation process. And they didn't have veterans a year ago. So all the guys that returned had to go through their own form of kind of maturing and understanding. Look, we heard the quotes from John Wall. We heard the quotes from other people when they got out of the building saying, this is going to be – the rest of the league isn't like this. And,
right.
And this is going to be the easiest situation you've ever been in, but this isn't how the league is. And so it was an adjustment for everyone. I think Jalen was the last one to kind of buy in, but now Jalen's realizing maybe I should have bought in a little earlier because I'm reaping the benefits as much as anyone on this squad, maybe other than Alpi.
Yeah, that might be a situation where he's so kind of stuck in his way because a lot of these guys coming up, you know, they're successful all the way through, you know, high school and all their select leagues and, you know, college if they go to college, and they're never really told no because what they're doing works. But now maybe, obviously, that it hasn't worked for Jalen Green, or it wasn't through the first 2 years as far as him being a consistent player. Maybe he's seeing the effects that hard coaching is having on Şengün, the effect that it's having on Jabari. He had those couple really good double-doubles and seems to be improving at this part in the season. Maybe he's seeing that effect from his other teammates, and it's finally clicking, like, well, maybe that can work for me too.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot previously. But the fact is you can coach. You have to coach everybody differently.
Sure.
You know the guys you can give tough love to. You know the guys you got to coddle. And I've always said that the biggest harmful thing in sports these days is AAU basketball. Because all you do is feed kids with a silver spoon and teach them the worst habits in basketball. And then when they get to the league, they don't have any fundamental skill.
Right.
And they don't have any understanding of how real basketball is played. So the fact that Udoka is kind of playing from behind when he took the job to try and get these guys caught up, but also to the point, to his credit, that he's gotten everybody to start buying in, is great for year one. That makes it a success no matter where they finish in the standings. All right, we'll continue to talk some Rockets here in the first half hour of the show. As I mentioned, Kelly Eco is going to join us at 3:30. That means we'll get his inside perspective covering the team on a daily basis about some things. If you have questions, let us know. 713-780-3776, where you can text or call the show. You can hit us up on YouTube. You can hit us up on the Twitch. We'd love to hear from you during the course of the program. Back with a whole lot more and another segment on the Rockets coming up right here on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, back on the Bees. Appreciate you joining us on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon in the city of Houston. Jeremy Branham on the road with the Cougs, hoping to get another win and wrap up the regular season with a big one Saturday against the Jayhawks. In the meantime, Brian McDonald joins me, and we entertain you up until the hour of 6 o'clock. We were talking about the Rockets. We were talking about the win last night. We're talking about the development of this young roster, and we're finally starting to see some of the benefits. Someone texted and said, but at this point, isn't it better to lose to do what you need to do for next season? Look, that's a conversation Jeremy and I have had. Granato believes you have to win. Jeremy is hell-bent on Embrace the Suck Part 2. I'm kind of to the point where you know you're getting Brooklyn's pick that's good, but no one has ever in a million years turned down the opportunity to get even better, whether you need to or not. So if you can get as many ping pong balls as possible to get a second chance to not lose your pick, because if it's not, it's protected only in the top four, otherwise it goes to Oklahoma City.
Right.
And it's a double whammy because OKC is in the West. OKC is a team you're going to probably compete with in the future because you're both very, very young rosters. But they're one of the best teams in the league. Do you really want to give them another asset that's going to be top 10 type talent? Or do you want to get as many ping pong balls as possible, being realistic that you're probably not getting in even into the play-in game anyway, to see as long as you're seeing the development of the kids? Then what wins and losses should be irrelevant at this point.
I would normally be with you guys, and I certainly was when it was time for the Texans to suck on purpose to make sure they had all the picks they need.
Get
for
it
the
right,
rebuild.
Brian. I trademarked it. It's embrace the suck.
Embrace the suck. Sorry, Brandon. You're right. You're absolutely
yes.
right. The problem is for the Rockets, they just can't get to number four. Like, I mean, I get that obviously you could – the more losses you have gives yourself a better chance with the ping pong
balls.
Yeah,
the lottery order's not – been determined. It's not predetermined just by your record.
No, I get it. It's just like, I mean, how low can you realistically go? Because you're looking at the rest of the standings as far as, you know, what your ping pong ball situation is going to be. I mean, the Wizards and the Pistons have 9 wins. You're looking at the Spurs, you played last night at 13. Trailblazers have 17. Even the Grizzlies are 6 games behind the Rockets with 21 wins. The Hornets have 15 wins. I mean, there's just a lot of team between the Rockets. I mean, sure, they could get extremely lucky with the ping pong balls. I just don't see their odds of being good enough to potentially – maybe you disagree with this take, but I wouldn't want to change the Rockets' direction from trying to win for the small odds that they would have of getting
now,
that top four pick.
Here's the difference, Brian. You're still trying to win, right? You're still – the kids – the roster, the Van Vliet's of the world, even the Dylan Brooks's of the world, Jeff Green, they're not trying to lose. It's just like with the NFL, with the Texans. We said the players aren't signing up for losing. They're not doing that. But as when you look at it from decisions you make, guys you put in the game, how you manage the game, let's just be real. Teams have done it for years and years. I'm not saying that there's a clear-cut way. What I am saying is with every loss, you have a better chance of getting the right ping pong balls.
No,
right?
Yeah,
because
if you
win out or win a majority of your games going forward, you're basically kissing that pick goodbye. But if you're in the ballpark of those teams that you were rattling off and there's a chance you might pass one or two of them, you might have the opportunity to have a better percentage to get the ping pong ball you need to be able to keep your own pick.
Yeah, I know. I absolutely agree with you guys. Like the mindset when Embrace the Suck was the conversation, it was like, what's the difference, you know, between 3 wins and 6 wins? Like nothing. Like it doesn't make you feel any better at the end of the season. And I would completely agree from an NBA mindset. You know, what's the difference between, I don't know, let's say they're at 27 wins now. So let's say the difference between 30 and 35 wins or whatever the NFL or the NBA equivalent of what we were talking about with the NFL would be. I completely agree with that mindset. I just like, what is it? I guess I would have to figure out what it looks like. Is it just mean sitting all your veterans that you brought over, you know, through free agency and just playing? Because I would never sit Jalen. Obviously, I would never sit Shingun, Jabari. I would never sit Cam or Amen. So you still have enough good players unless you're just sitting basically every single veteran. And that would seem to be tough to get them to buy into that. But unless you're sitting every single veteran and just losing because you don't have a strong depth behind that young core anymore, I just don't see the Rockets as really fully being able to lose enough games on purpose to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Whether you win or lose, they're not doing it intentionally. But I've been harping on ever since we got past the trade deadline, I don't need to see Aaron Holiday anymore.
Yeah, I'd
don't,
be fine with that.
I don't need to see
Jeff Green.
I don't need to see Jock Landale, okay? Because people were clamoring on Rockets Twitter last night, hey, look at what we got, a big man if you need him. What are you going to do, cut him? Because at this point, you're not getting anything for him. You signed him to the deal. It was a bad signing, but he's on your roster. You can break free probably at the end of the year.
Yeah,
but at the same time, all I want to see is, I want to see Amen keep getting better every year. And you know, toughness. We saw a little of the toughness last night. Nobody's backing down on this team, which I love. But Amen, when you watch him with every passing game, his ability to rebound and block shots defensively, do things that you really don't see with a kid like that coming into this league in his rookie year very often. I want to see Cam understand that just because I'm on the floor with my warm-ups off doesn't mean that the minute the ball touches my hands, I got to shoot it at the rim every time. I got to understand that I still got to play part of the system. And also when things don't go my way, he has the tendency to do a lot of the James Harden thing where he quits on one end of the floor because he didn't get a bucket to go in. We're not SportsCenter babies. This is the NBA. And you got to play both ends of the floor and you got to understand playing the right way.
Yeah, I I'm totally with you on that aspect. You don't want to see Cam Whitmore take bad shots and pout when things don't go his way. I'm not sure how it would all translate to getting enough ping pong balls to accomplish the goal. I mean, I get they would increase their chances, but if it's only increasing their chances, then it's hard to say without looking at the exact percentages from spot to spot and the draft lottery. But if it's only increasing your odds, I don't know, maybe 2-3%, like it just doesn't feel worth it for me. I'm all for, you know, sit down Jock Landale, sit down Jeff Green, sit down Holiday, and make sure guys like Cam and Amen Thompson get all the playing time they could possibly handle. But beyond that, I don't really, like, I just don't see the, I'd rather this team start to get accustomed to winning and not necessarily with the goal of making the play-in, but just so they have experience winning.
Didn't they just do that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, but I mean, this team, I mean, like the guys that were here, you know, 2 years under Silas the last two seasons.
But I'm saying you want to get them accustomed to winning. They beat the Suns 2 out of 3. Yeah. They just won at home. They're winning.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's a very small sample size, though. Look, I don't believe in momentum from season to season, but I do believe in building a culture, and I think they would gain more from building the culture of winning, still trying over this last month of the regular season, more so than increasing their, you know, their lottery odds by a couple percent.
Okay, that's fair. To me, the bigger things are working out the little things, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? Like showing the young guys development, like learning to win on the road because they haven't been able to do it all year. And that's unbelievably mind-boggling, right?
Yeah.
But starting to put the little things together so that you can make a full-fledged effort next year, and assuming you have a good offseason, assuming you can add a piece here or there as well, that you could do this thing from the perspective of our young guys got better. Our veterans understand their roles. Steven Adams is obviously going to be a help just from the standpoint of being a solid low post backup for Alpi and maybe teach him some things. And the fact that this team could make a run. So we'll see how it goes, but there's no better man to ask any more questions and kind of run those kind of things off of than Kelly Eco. He's going to join us on the phone in the next segment. So Kelly's going to join us next. We'll get into some of this and probably a whole lot more. If there's questions that you'd like Kelly to try and answer for you during this segment, 713-780-3776. Call us or text us. Hit us on Twitch or Twitter. Back with a whole lot more. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Now back to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back on the Bees. It's still the Bees intact. It's just one has flown the hive for the day as Jeremy is in South Florida to do a little basketball tonight. So BMAC and I are at the controls, and we'll take you all the way through until 6 p.m. Having some good conversation on the Rockets early in the show. No better the guy to have more conversation about the Rockets than the guy that basically eats, sleeps, lives, drinks when he's not losing weight and wearing mock turtlenecks. The Rockets. It's Kelly Eco of The Athletic, the Rockets beat reporter. Kel, always great to have you and your B.I.G.-like voice on this show. Hope all is well. We were talking about this team. We were talking about the win. We're talking about seeing the development of this young bunch with Ime Udoka finally and his coaching staff getting through to these guys. What have you seen recently specifically about a guy like Jalen Green, about how he's turned the corner, finally bought in, and now is reaping the benefits?
Yeah, so for a guy like Jalen, who obviously is a very talented guard but had to go through the things of, you know, figuring out where he stood in the hierarchy of the Rockets offense, figuring out where to get his touches, figuring out how to balance playing slow and playing fast. You know, you saw those struggles early on in the season, and even as recently as post-All-Star break, where, you know, you kind of saw him trying to work through those things on the fly. But now recently, he's turned a corner. He's simple things down. He's playing more aggressive. He's getting to his reads quicker. He's understanding how to read defenses quicker. He's playing off of Fred VanVleet and Alperen Şengün quicker. And in turn, it's creating easier, you know, sources of offense for him. Now, you know, Ime talks a lot about how he wants Jalen to be a well-rounded offensive player, not just, you know, a talented scorer that everyone knows that he can be, but how to be an effective playmaker, how to be an effective team option, even when you don't have the ball in your hands. Those are all the things that go into how to go from good to great. So I think you're seeing recently him understanding those principles of Udoka's offense and trying to apply that to himself, you know, on the fly.
Kelly Eco from The Athletic joining us here on the Killer Bees. Kelly, obviously Şengün has probably gotten the most headlines as far as a Rockets young player taking a big leap this year under Ime Udoka. But after Şengün, who would you say has benefited the most from Coach Udoka in taking the biggest step forward of these young players on the Houston Rockets?
I think Amen Thompson. You know, you have a guy in Amen who looks like he was created in a lab just because of his physical attributes. You know, he's 6'7", rangy, quick, athletic, explosive. And then you see how that automatically translates to on-court performances. He's already become an effective rim protector. He's already become a switchable defender. You know, he's physical. He's going to put his whole weight into you. Obviously, with the ball in his hands, he has the court vision to get guys open in good spots. Obviously, the jump shot is coming along, and that's going to be the biggest time to see, you know, if he's, you know, Andre Iguodala or, you know, a mini LeBron. But, you know, from right now, I think he's been able to play a ton of minutes under Udoka and been able to see exactly how he could be an effective player going forward. And I think that's the biggest thing for rookies, especially nowadays where teams don't really want to rebuild that long. They want to speed things up. And now being able to be in sort of a two-timeline thing where you want to develop now and win games now, you're seeing why Amen has emerged as one of the top guys under Udoka.
Kel, I look at this and I see a good young roster. I see a Fred VanVleet, who I think is a really good addition to this team for the short term. And the contract doesn't really bother me at all because it's tradable and because this is exactly what Udoka needed kind of early on. Dylan Brooks, I think, was a huge mistake. I think it was way too many years, too much money, and I don't think that you're getting nearly what I was expecting just out of him. And I don't know another team in the league that was willing to offer him that much money. I say that to say Rafael Stone's contract is coming up. And I got to believe there are a lot of guys looking at this situation with Houston and thinking, that's a job that I really think I could do something with. Tillman's got to realize, much like the Texans, you're not trying to bridge the gap from embracing the suck to just trying to be relevant. This team has a chance to be good going forward, and I wonder if Stone is the right guy going forward for this job.
I mean, you know, you look at all the things that he's done for this season, you know, drafting a man in Cam. You know, obviously he was a guy that traded up to get Shangoon. You still have those guys in Tari, Jabari, Dan. Like, there's a lot of talent on this roster.
Yep.
Where I think ultimately I would tell if they're successful or not is if they're able to go out and actually go get a star. You know, that's the hard part because it's not every day that you see disgruntled stars available in this league. And when they're available, do you have enough assets to go and pull the trigger? You know, because as it currently stands, this team is not good enough to make the playoffs right now, right? And they're not. And if they keep the same team next year, the West is two stacks for them to even think about trying to break into that glass ceiling if they don't have an outside source of help. So that's going to ultimately be, in my opinion, the front office's job, is to go and bring in somebody that can help augment this group, you know, and take them from phase two to phase three. So that's going to come down to if Stone is able to, you know, be aggressive enough and pull those triggers to go and bring in help. Because as it currently stands, this team is talented, but they're not good enough to win.
Kelly Eco from The Athletic is joining us here on the Killer Bees. As you were talking there, Kelly, I mean, obviously it's going to be hard to bring in a star player. You can't just snap your fingers and make it happen. But obviously, you know, Rockets fans over the years have seen this team bring in Dwight Howard and Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook, obviously James Harden and Tracy McGrady. It's kind of like we've gotten accustomed to the Rockets being able to pull off that type of deal. I mean, it's hard. I'm sure it'd be hard to find exactly one name, but is there maybe a few players that you see maybe coming towards the end of their contract on other teams, maybe teams that aren't close to winning a title in the next year that might become available if the Rockets were willing to make a big splashy move?
So, you know, a guy like Mikal Bridges, he probably isn't the name to really push things forward. But, you know, Donovan Mitchell is a name for sure that I think should definitely be on their radar, and is on their radar because he's a guy who can really take things. He really can increase the floor and the ceiling of a good team, right? So you've seen what he was able to do in Utah, and you've seen what he's been able to do alongside Darius Garland in Cleveland, and just really be a potentially A1 guy on a very good team. So if he's able to get a guy like that, you know, even a guy like a Jaylen Brown, I wouldn't put Zach LaVine in that class because of, you know, I don't think he really, as talented as he is, I don't think he's the kind of guy that really wants to embrace that whole mentality with Doak and stuff like that. But if I was to name two guys, I would say either Donovan Mitchell or Jaylen Brown. But the hard thing about that is that Jaylen Brown has a good thing going in Boston, so it's not like, you know, he's itching to get out of there. You know,
well, and he got paid too, and they're one of the leading probably the leading candidate aside from Denver to win it this year. So
right.
Yeah, I could see Donovan Mitchell kind of saying, "Well, at Cleveland, I'm probably at my ceiling," but then the question is, how much of this core do you have to break up, and what do you have to give to get a Donovan Mitchell?
Yeah, so and that's the good thing about drafting two first-round talents every year, because now if it comes down to it, we have enough pieces, you know, to potentially appeal a Cleveland or whoever team has a star that becomes available. You know, you have enough talented guys. If you continue to develop these guys you have right now, they're going to improve their trade value at some point, because this is a business, and at the end of the day, your job is to go from phase one to phase two to phase three, right? So if you have enough picks and young players to win the deal, you might get something done.
So, Kel, with that being said, you know, you see it, you're on it, you deal with it the way we deal with it. The Twitter, everybody's got an opinion, and most of them are anonymous and cowardly, so they say whatever they feel. But Jalen Green has gotten the most of the fingers pointed at him throughout the season. When we talk about looking for a superstar, when we think about trying to make a package that might entice someone to give up a star, does it still start with Jalen Green, and does he have the value league-wide to be the centerpiece of what you'd have to give in order to get someone like that?
I mean, if he continues playing the way he's been playing as of late, absolutely. I think he has that appeal as a athletic, young, three-level scorer that can really, you know, turn the tide of the game. Now, obviously, he's still working through the efficiency part and, you know, his playmaking, ball handling, and stuff like that. But as a young player, I think he's only 22, 21, that's enough of a timeline to where any team, if you were to put him in a deal, you know, that should appeal to a front office, you know, mm-hmm. under the right system, under the right tutelage, guys, because, like, even besides him, like, they have so many guys that you can, like, a Cam Wilmore is appealing, a man is appealing, Tari is, like, those guys are all appealing just because of their age and because of their potential. So when you talk about the business of going out and dealing for stars, what those teams want in return, because you can never get equal value, you want guys that you can at least look at and say, if we can develop these guys to even get to 85% of what we lost, then it's a win at the end of the day. So I think Jalen can absolutely be a centerpiece of a big deal. It's all about, can he continue on this path that he's been playing with recently.
Kelly Eco joining us from The Athletic. Kelly, sticking with the idea of the Rockets adding a major star from outside the team, I'm curious because, I mean, obviously Şengün got the better of Wemby last night, but when you look at the division the Rockets are in with the Spurs, with Wemby, it looks like they have their tier one superstar. He's obviously extremely, extremely young, so he's got a long way to develop. But they have their tier one superstar that seems capable of eventually being a title leading player. The Mavericks obviously have it with Luka. Ja, when he could stay off of Instagram Live, seems like that type of player. And then we'll see what happens with Zion in New Orleans. But when you look at the kind of the last 20 years of the NBA, it really stands out as still really the 2004 Pistons as being the only team that's won a title without that go-to number one star caliber player. You see the Rockets roster, as good as this young core seems and as good as their potential seems, you still think they have to go out outside the team? Or is there potential for one of these guys on the team now to develop into that sort of guy?
There's always the potential of one of those guys, but, you know, history always tells us that the odds of that happening are pretty low. You know, the guys that go out and win these championships, they go out and add a Kevin Durant. They go out and add, you know, who down the line. If you want to talk about Durant, if you want to talk about adding LeBron to the Lakers, like, you have to go out and add a star. Like, I know everyone wants to play the game of, you know, build organically and, you know, cross our fingers and hope that something pops, but historically that's not always going to be the case. Like, you have to go out and get somebody to come and help and kind of move things forward. So that's why I think, as talented as Şengün is, as talented as all these guys are they exactly the type to be a 1A on a championship team? No. So, and that's not a fault against them. They're young players. They're still developing. It's in their third season. So they don't have to be those kind of players right now. Can they develop to them at some point in the future? For sure. But if you're talking about right now or next year, no. I think the easiest option is to go and bring somebody like a Donovan that is already established as an all-NBA type of player and can really help, you know, you win games and, you know, take the lion's share of the offense and really stable things out for everyone else. So I think that's kind of where they are right now.
Keeping it real, bringing the knowledge. That's why I love you, my man. Always great to catch up with you. I know you got a game to get to tonight, but we always appreciate you stopping in. So keep doing your thing, yes, and we'll keep following along.
Yes, sir.
There you go.
Much love, Audrey.
You got it, buddy. Kelly Eco from The Athletic, Rockets beat writer. Appreciate him cutting out some time for us. We're going to come back with a whole lot more. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. But before we go to the break, I do want to tell you, if you're interested in that game tonight, there may or may not have been a discussion or two on the Twitch chat between Todd and I and King about just maybe which way to lean in the game tonight between the Rockets and the Clippers. But not that we're, you know, trying to tip you off or anything, but if there's a place that you want to put down a bet, I would suggest mybookie.ag. It's the only place that I suggest you go put down a wager, because mybookie.ag takes care of their customers. They always got bonuses going, and the way to get them is to use our bonus code, which you get because you listen to us. Use the bonus code BET975 whenever you are doing anything to put money into your account. Maybe you're setting up your account for the first time. There's a sign-up bonus. Maybe you're adding money to your account. There's a reload bonus. Maybe you're getting a friend to sign up, and you put in your code. There's a bonus for that too. Basically, anytime you put in between $50 and $1,000, you put in money, they're going to match it on top. You're going to reap the benefits. It's absolutely fantastic. And they got all the sports and in the in-game betting too. They've been around for over a decade, so they ain't going anywhere, and neither is your money. And they're going to take care of you in a variety of different ways. So much so that even when there's not UFC and soccer and hockey and college and pro basketball and soon to come baseball going on, they have live dealers standing by with casino games as well, so you can get your gamble on whenever you feel like it. Check them out today. Go to where I always tell you to go, bet. Go to mybookie.ag. Use our promo code BET975 and bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Check it in on the text line before we switch gears, get to a little Texans talk. 8488 says, LP will always own Wemby like Akeem did David Robinson. Okay, slow down just a touch. Maybe this year? We'll see how it goes. I hope you're right. But Wemby's going to be really, really good in the next couple of years, in my opinion. So you got to be careful on that one. I don't know what you think about that, BMAC, but man.
Yeah, I mean, let's slow down on any Akeem comparisons for Shingo Knight. Yeah, I get the excitement, but yeah, we got to slow down a little bit there.
And 8437 said, I wouldn't want to see a team that went out and got Ime Udoka to be their head coach become a team that sits all their veterans because they want to embrace the suck. I don't want to associate that kind of play with this head coach. Who's better than the young players that you're playing, though? That's my thing. If sitting Holiday means more minutes for Amen Thompson, I don't care. Yeah, I'm not getting worse by putting Amen Thompson's game on the floor with all the versatility he brings already.
That's as far as I think I would go with it. I definitely get the point by the texter there. I would be willing to sit Holiday, Jeff Green, and Jock Landell, and let, you know, the young guys take up those extra minutes, whatever, however that gets divided amongst the rest of the team. But I probably would stop there, because I still, like I said in the previous segment before Keely Eco joined us, that I still think there's value in the Rockets and this young core starting to build that winning culture. I don't care about the actual wins and losses. I don't care about the final season, you know, record in the standings and whatever the final win total is. But I do think there is value, not in momentum, because momentum year to year is false to me, but in actually building a winning culture, especially for these guys that have spent the last couple of years under Steven Silas.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see another big one tonight against the Clippers. So I'm very curious on a bounce back-to-back game how they're going to play, because they haven't been great on back-to-backs. They got some momentum. They've won some road games, which we were questioning. Now can you go out and beat a good team at home where you've played better? And I'm also interested to see if there's going to have another tribute video for James Harden, because I don't need to see another one of those.
Gosh.
You and I have been through enough of that. Yeah. We don't need to see another tribute video for James Harden.
I'm done with that.
All right, let's get to another topic as we get into the Houston Texans. Look, we know free agent season is upon us. There are some very, very interesting cap casualties that are coming out of the woodwork that we're going to probably get to throughout this show that we can talk about as well. But we're getting into the fact that there have been some articles out there, and we constantly bring them to your attention. Some people seem to think John Gernard is the one free agent that the Texans cannot afford to lose. CBS Sports coming out with their list of free agents and the one key player each team can't afford to lose, and they said it was John Grenard. I don't know about you, B-Mac. I don't agree with that. I think that John Grenard is replaceable. I think that when you start thinking about it, sure, it's easy to say, well, I don't think that John Grenard, because he was a bookend to Will Anderson Jr. and because he had his best season as a pro, it's easy to just say, well, you got to have him back. But then when you start factoring in what really matters, well, how much money is he going to get? And if he's going to play hardball and think that he's got to test the market, that he's worth more than what the Texans are willing to give him, and he wants more years than you think he's worth, then there's at a certain point, there's a breaking point where you just go, I can find someone else, whether it in free agency and a veteran player, or I can look to the draft. But I'll do what I have to do to turn the page if that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we can separate, like, do we want him back with is he, you know, irreplaceable? Because I think those are two different things. That we can both want him back, and like, especially if, you know, Jonathan Grenard, now that he's a free agent and the Texans didn't tag him, if the market basically comes back to the point where Grenard's AAV is less than the yearly value of the franchise tag, as I'm sure Nick Caseri was hoping by not tagging him, then I think you and I and Jeremy would be open to the conversation if maybe that AAV slips from the $20 million franchise tag down to, let's say, 14 or 15. Maybe we're more open to having the conversation, but that doesn't mean he's irreplaceable. I mean, I come at that from a couple of ways. One, obviously, Jonathan Grenard, four seasons here with the Texans. He's only had one season worthy of being called irreplaceable. All the other seasons, he's hurt. He wasn't getting to the quarterback as much as he did this year. None of those seasons were irreplaceable quality of play. And two, I mean, the Texans have, you know, draft capital. We've talked to guys like Matt Miller yesterday talking about how good the pass rushers are in the first round. I think you, Jeremy, and I are all in agreement. That's probably our first preference by what they address in the first round draft. So they go out and do that. Let's say they draft a Chop Robinson or Latu from UCLA or one of these edge rushers. Suddenly, you know, Jonathan Grenard is replaceable because you just replaced him with a guy deemed to be arguably even a higher ceiling as a first round pick compared to where Grenard was as a third round pick.
That's what I'm saying. But there's many different ways to get the job done.
Absolutely.
When you look at it, there's some guys, when you start looking at the free agent market, that are probably going to slip through the cracks, not get the kind of money that they thought they were going to get. I keep saying, keep a close eye right now on all these cap casualties that are coming daily from all these different teams that can't afford to pay all their salaries as they get ready for the draft, and they need to try and make some additions to their team where you can get it. And like you said, even in talking to the guys we've talked to already with the draft, at least in the top 40, there are going to be defensive linemen and pass rushers that are going to be available. The depth is at corner, where you can still add a corner, but the key is going to be, and that's why it's so dicey when you think about how the NFL sets this up, free agency comes well before the draft. So you're going to know going into the draft when we talk about all these mock drafts, whether they got Grenard done or whether he walked, whether Stevie Nelson came back or Stevie Nelson moved on to greener in terms of money, pastures somewhere else on a multi-year deal. But that doesn't preclude you from saying, okay, they walked, but I can find another corner that was making Stevie Nelson money, and I can interject him right there, and we now have a very, very advantageous situation going on here where people want to play here. They want to come play with CJ. They want to play for D'Amico. They like what we're building here in Houston to where it isn't the kind of anti-NFL that we've seen for the last couple of years, where it's going to be enticing. They may take a little less with an extra year added on, and they may give you just as much as John Grenard's giving you because he did have a career year last year.
Yeah, and that's what makes him not irreplaceable, because you're going to have options, whether it's drafting someone in the first round. You mentioned, you know, the cap casualties. We've heard rumors about Khalil Mack. We talked about Hassan Reddick yesterday. There are names that could be interested in coming here to play with D'Amico, playing on the other side of Will Anderson. And that's the other part of this, is Will Anderson, who obviously defensive rookie of the year, very good season last year. But as he continues to grow, because he's got a lot more room on that potential, he only had 7 sacks last year, as he continues to grow and becomes a better pass rusher and starts to demand even more and more attention from the opposing offensive line blocking schemes, you're going to see whoever's on the opposite side of that, much like what happened to the people on the other side of J.J. Watt, start to have easier pass rush lanes, maybe more one-on-one blocks, because all the attention is going to Will Anderson, making it easier to find someone to get some production on the other side of the ball if they're having to game plan to stop Will Anderson.
Here's the thing, B-Mac. The other thing is that everybody thinks that in order to replace him, they're thinking top of the market. They're thinking sexy name. They're thinking big impact name. You don't need to necessarily have the highest of the high on the list of available pass rushers, whether it be in the draft or specifically in free agency and with cap casualties. You just need a guy that's capable of doing the kind of things that Grenard was able to do. And there are guys that are going to be out there. There's ways to do that, whether you do it with both linebacker and or pass rusher on the edge. And you can make a combination of it. But there's going to be players that are going to be at your access that you can try and replace him with. So that's why I disagree with the fact Grenard is not irreplaceable. I don't know that the Texans have many. CJ's one of them. Obviously, on the offensive side, it's a different story. But I think that Will Anderson Jr. is at the top of the list. Stingley's probably right there.
Yeah, Tunsil, I would say.
Tunsil's probably in the conversation as well. All right, so that's the first hour of the show. We still got 2 hours to go, so plenty more to get to. Hang with us as we continue to roll on. We're going to have a mock draft to look at, of course, as we always do, and the fact that we're always, always thinking about you. So if there's something on your mind you want to get off your chest, we'd love to have you be a part of the program. 713-780-3776. That'll enable you to get in with us and talk about what you'd like to talk about. Back with more. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.